just some more questions, comments and complaints. I'll just get into them. If you want to go to the toilet, please go, let him go. It's okay. First one, Ajahn Brahm. How do you call yourself a Buddhist when you break the precepts all the time by killing us with your jokes? Can you talk about the importance of humour in life? Number one, when you crack jokes, when you give a talk, people don't fall asleep. So I've practiced that over many years. When I see people getting a bit sleepy, it's time for a joke. And they wake up, and as a Tibetan monk once taught me, that when people start laughing, that when their mouths are open, that's when you can throw in the pill of wisdom. So it's good. It's a lot of humour which does actually come in jokes. I just went through this earlier. Oh, it is. I'll say why. There appear some times when my meditation goes so well, I find a good sense of peace and comfort in body and mind, but then it all fades away. Afterward, it feels quite the opposite to what I described earlier, and then it comes back again. Then it goes away again. Why is that? Do I need to do something to stabilize it, or should I just let it be? It can be frustrating at time. Help. There was a refugee who came to the United States. And even though he was highly educated, the only job he could get was on a building site. So he worked so hard all day on Monday. When he went home, his wife asked him, how did it go? He said, well, worked very hard, but I never got any money. You know, try again on Tuesday. Tried again on Tuesday, worked hard, still didn't get any money. Same thing on Wednesday, didn't get paid. He thought, they just exploit refugees in this country. I don't want to go to work again. You just work your butt off and you get zip. He said, just go try again on Thursday. So he tried one more day on Thursday. Same happened, worked really hard and still got no pay. So I don't want to do this anymore. He only went to work again on Friday because he had nothing else to do. And on Friday, his boss gave him this big pay packet. And when he went home, he told his wife, I've finally figured out how it works in the US. From now on, I'm only going to go to work on Fridays. That is the answer to this question. Why is it that sometimes you get lovely meditation and then you don't get it? Every day can't be payday. So all those times you are meditating and you don't get the peace and joy, it's like the worker who goes to work on Monday, they don't get paid. But it's important. You're making the good meditation karma. Keep on going. So for all of those people today who haven't got anywhere yet, don't worry, the check's in the mail. So that is a joke, but it also explains what's going on. During meditation, when your mind wanders out, how do you get back on track? I've already mentioned that. Just let it go. Bye-bye. Pack its bags, and it'll come back. How do you discipline a 16-year-old daughter sneaking out? Or sneaking out or in her boyfriend in the home? Sneaking out for her boyfriend or sneaking her boyfriend in the home? And lying to the parents. Look, your poor little daughter. Why does she lie? Because she's afraid of you. And that's a story that many of these kids have grown up almost in the temple in Perth. I've been there for such a long time. So they trust you. And you become like a second parent to them. So this young lady came along, Sri Lankan girl, about 18, said, Ajahn Brahm, I'm in big trouble. So what's going on? He said, I'm pregnant. So have you told your mum and dad yet? Said, no, they'll kill me when they find out. That's why I've come to you. That's your job. Can you please tell my mum and dad for me? Said, of course I'll help you out. But from that experience, that's when you started to really understand, why is it that your children lie to you? Because they're afraid you'll kill them if they tell the truth. And that really is a very sad situation. The time when your children need their parents the most, daughters pregnant, sons in trouble with drugs, the police found out, whatever, the time they need their parents most of all, they're so afraid of telling you. They want me to tell the parents for them. I said, that's not good enough. So those of you who have children, the 16-year-old girl, if you haven't done this yet, please do it now. Tell your child, whatever you do, the door of my house, my heart will always be open to you, no matter what you do. I'm your mum, I'm your dad. My purpose is not to scold you, but to help you. So as long as you tell the truth, daughter, son, as long as you tell the truth, I will never punish you, scold you, or shout at you. Otherwise, you're encouraging your children to lie. And I do this as almost like a formal ceremony when I give a marriage blessing to husband and wife. Tell them, please, there should be one person in this world you're not afraid of telling the truth to, your partner. And in order to encourage that, you make this promise, this vow, to your partner. You can tell me anything. As long as it's the truth. Sometimes it will hurt me, but please tell me, because it will hurt me more if you hide it, or if you tell me lies. And I'll always understand that telling the truth is more important, no matter what else you do. Even if you had an affair with somebody. Please tell me. Because then we can work it out together. Try and find some solutions. So if you do have this amnesty with people you love, as long as you tell the truth, there'll be no consequences, only help and understanding and love. We all make mistakes. And that was why, I don't know if John was there at the time, that I made my confession to all my supporters in Perth on a Friday night. I don't think it was the time before we had the internet there. Because at the time, there was many Thai monks who had mistresses who were involved in scandals. So knowing that honesty was the most important, I put my head down and made my confession. And I said that, well, here it goes. I said, I spent many of the happiest hours of my life in the loving arms of another man's wife. We hugged, we kissed. I loved her. She loved me. But she was married. And when I said that, many I could hear say, oh no, not Ajahn Brahm as well. Oh no. And one person who's even going out the door. When I said, many hours in the loving arms of another man's wife, that woman was my mother. It's true. She loved me, I loved her, and she's already married to my dad. That was the point of how perceptions, you know, can just, you know, you hear that and you jump to conclusions. Oh no, that's adultery. It's my mum, of course. Nothing wrong with that. But that honesty is really important. At least have someone you can share with without fear. A partner. And you make that vow to them. Darling, partner, whatever you do in life, I won't scold you. I won't hurt you. I won't divorce you, separate, kill you. As long as you tell me the truth. You make mistakes, please let me know. With your children as well. Otherwise, they get deeper and deeper into trouble. And they're scared of telling you. And again, when they need you the most, that's when they lie. Would you describe what happens to you as you open up and let go during meditation? All the things which I feared would go wrong, don't. Instead, you get peace when you feel free, when you open up and let go. We close off because we're afraid what might happen. But actually, you really open up and you let go and you're kind. And everything settles down. And what you're afraid of never occurs when you relax. What should one do if they have trauma in their past and dissociate during meditation? It really depends. As long as you feel safe, not threatened, in a situation where you have lots of kindness, and you have had trauma in the past, and you disassociate, please let it be. Have some kindness and some trust that as long as you're letting things be, things will settle down. Sometimes disassociating is, maybe part of the process, but that trauma, which I mentioned, I think on the first talk, about really bad traumas, if you can allow that little door of your heart to open and the staircase to go down. I did say this yesterday, didn't I? No, okay. Oh, sorry, because I give so many talks, I don't know what I said yesterday. I really do let go of the past. So that is something which came from the opening the door of your heart simile, which I mentioned, that came from my father who told him, whatever you do in your life, son, the door of my house will always be open to you. He meant his heart will always be open to you. It was my first understanding of unconditional love. It wasn't demanding anything. From that I learned when I go and see people who are sick in hospital, you don't have to get better. Don't try. I will love you and care for you no matter what happens. If it's time for you to die, die with my blessings. Love you so much you can go. That greatest act of love is always to let somebody go. So you give them freedom rather than attaching to them. But I've used that for people. It's in a group, the Australian Society of Survivors of Torture and Trauma. So these are refugees, and they come to a place like the US, in this particular case Australia. Physically they're free. Emotionally, they're still in the torture camps, still being raped mercilessly, tortured to the point that they'd rather prefer death. And people tell me the stories, and it really is, it does make your skin creep, crawl. That what one human being could do to another is just mind-boggling. But they survived, somehow. I think if that was me, just no way could you survive. But they do, they make it out. They come to a free country like the US. But they're not free. They're still in those prisons being tortured. That's the trauma, flashbacks. Can't sleep at night. And what works, and John, talking about Sumita, is John gone? Oh, there he is. Oh, he's gone out, okay. Just an old friend. His wife works in this place, and she confirms, yeah, it's really powerful. It still works. It's part of their program. When you feel safe, and you have enough courage and energy to do this, you imagine a little heart in your chest. Valentine's Day heart, not a medical heart, because that's just too complicated. Pointing at the bottom, little cleavage in the top. The Valentine's Day heart. And you imagine that as best you can, and imagine two little doors opening up. And inside your heart is that part of you which you are comfortable with. The part you can accept. The happy, good times. The times that you were a good person. Good things happening to you. that's easy to keep in your heart. And you look down and there's another part of you, the little girl who was raped, the young man who was beaten and beaten and beaten. That's outside, on the ground, terrified, hurting. And you imagine a little staircase going out from your heart, like on those old aircraft, going down, down, down to the bottom. And you're the part of you which you love, which you can accept and live with, is inside. The part of you which you've rejected, kept outside because it hurts so much, is outside. And you have the courage to say, come up. You can come inside my heart as well. And you describe these traumatic but liberating experiences of this little girl who was so cruelly raped by people she trusted. Come up. Walking up. And when she gets to the top of the stairs, you embrace. You're not rejected anymore. You're part of me. Come in. And when that happens, it's so powerful. Instead of trying to get rid of those past traumas, you allow them to come in. Come in. It's what happened. It's part of me. And then when this happens, it's huge. And people are now not divided. The trauma goes. And I've seen the results of people who have done this. And the one anecdote was one of these women who was just so terribly, violently, cruelly raped many, many times. And she was describing the experience. And there was a young man next to her. It's terrible what happened to you. And she turned on him and said, what are you saying? That's who I am. You've got no right to say it's terrible. That's me. And she was totally at ease with it. Not afraid of it. Not allowing it to give her any pain. But totally accepting and embracing. The door of her heart had allowed it to come in. And she was no longer diminished by it. But actually strengthened by it. It was an amazing thing to see. And, you know, when sometimes that I take some responsibility for that healing, that just makes me emotional. It works. Some of the most difficult cases of trauma, you free them. Not by doing the normal thing, which is trying to forget it, blot it out, take revenge, but by opening the door of your heart to it. That's all you can do. It works. It's the rejection, the stigmatizing, pushing it away, and it won't go away. It's the opposite which works. So, and this is with huge trauma. So we've all got trauma in our lives, but you know, that is, I've never seen anything worse than that, or heard of it. If it works for that, it will work for whatever happened to you. And sometimes, you know, you're totally innocent, didn't deserve that. Sometimes it's what you did. You know, you were that rapist. You were that person who was really cruel. Come inside. You belong in here as well. When you do that, you don't ever do anything like that ever again. You're healed. You understand. So that is four. That's such powerful stuff. So that is how, and it works, how you deal with the trauma of the past. So you don't dissociate, you don't try and blot it out. You let it come in. Well, I think I did say yesterday about trees in the forest. Again, when I first made that simile, It was in a mental health conference in Australia. And not the psychologists or psychiatrists, but the clients, the people who had gone through mental traumas and schizophrenia and depressions and OCD, the clients of the psychologists. And one of the girls, the women, they came up to me afterwards to apologize. She said, as soon as I saw you come in, I didn't know who you were. I thought you were a wanker. A wanker is just a very derogatory term, you know, for, it's a, I don't know, it's an English-Australian term. Don't know if you have, do you have that word in US? You know, it's, but anyway, it's not a very nice term. And she said, but when I told that story, that every tree is damaged, greater or less, and every tree belongs in the forest. And the very fact you belong, you're not sort of pushed out. There's not something terribly wrong with you that you have to live apart from others. Or you have to live apart, you know, from your own heart. You have to live outside. No way. Come in. And then also a very true insight, which everyone can verify, the damaged, crooked, twisted trees, they are the most beautiful. They're the ones which I like, and you like as well. So what was once something which they were ashamed of, stigmatized, pushed out, they're at peace with, and they value. It makes them beautiful. And that is not just exaggerating. That woman who was describing how she was so badly raped and saying, this is me, this is who I am. That was one hell of a woman. You could really admire her. Her strength and beauty was stunning. I don't mean her face or her boobs. I'm talking about her. Amazing person. So it's true what I mean. Most beautiful trees in the forest. What are we taka and we chara? That is, what they're talking about here is in the descriptions of the first jhana, there is this word which does mean thinking and pondering in other contexts. But in the context of jhana, it means something different. It is a movement, first jhana, movement of the mind onto the bliss. You hold the bliss. Because you still haven't 100% let go. It's 99.9%. Because you hold on to the bliss, a bit of grasping, a bit of lack of confidence and faith, it means it becomes unstable. You move away, but the bliss is so powerful, it just draws you in. The drawing in is the vitaka. The holding it is the vichara. Subverbal, not thinking. And, you know, I started pushing that line from experience, but also, you know, people who have access to the Chinese Mahayana version in the Sanskrit, or translated now into Chinese, confirm that in the ancient Mahayana scriptures, vitaka vichara is never translated as thinking. It's far too coarse for this fine experience of dana. It does mean onto the object and just holding it. And even the Theravada commentary, the Visuddhimagga, says the same. It's not thinking. They describe it as, that's vitaka, and the resonance of the bell is a vichara. Not thinking, it's subverbal. Can you comment on the idea of replacing negative thoughts with positive thoughts, pounding out the rotten peg in right effort, mindfully watching the negative thoughts and accepting them when it is each appropriate? It's the same. You don't pound out the rotten peg. You replace it. Pounding out. So that, you know, that's like military stuff. Instead, you're not kicking butt. You're kind to your butt. So, replacing negative thoughts. If you try and replace negative thoughts, that's another negative thoughts. What's wrong with negative thoughts? One of the little booklets of some of my sayings, which was published in Indonesia, was happy every day. And when they published that as a title, I got lots of complaints. How can you be happy every day? What about at night time? I said, that means, no, every day and night. But how can you be happy when you're miserable? Exactly. You're happy to be miserable. So now you get it. So don't worry, be grumpy. If you're grumpy, be grumpy. Be happy to be grumpy. You've got rights enshrined in the US Constitution, not just for the pursuit of happiness, but for the pursuit of misery, if you so desire. You have the right to pursue negativity. If you want to. But what it means is you're happy to be negative. Happy to be grumpy. And as soon as you're happy to be grumpy, you can't be grumpy anymore. Trying to get rid of grumpiness is what sustains it. So yeah, be grumpy. Fine. You have my permission. There's not much point anymore. So you're not feeding it, which means it disappears. If you try to replace negative thoughts, they just remain. If you are kind to them, just like you let that kid leaving home. Okay, go, pack the bags. And then they always come back. The negativity is gone. Word. Alpha null be equivalent spreading of Indra's net. Don't know. I know the internet. Is that Indra's net? Yeah. Anyway, and alpha null, that was just infinity, but that's only the first level of infinity. There's alpha 1, infinitely bigger than infinity. That's just the math. I find that when I relax and let go in my meditation, my style drops away and it's distracting to remember to restore it. That's controlling. Don't try and restore it. Just start with a smile and then just see what happens. But if you get a bit dull, take away your mindfulness from your breathing or whatever you're aware of, put it onto the face. Smile, and then go back to your meditation objects. It does actually work. It does give you a boost. And if you have time, can you come round for dinner and a cup of peachy tips? Thanks either way. I don't have dinner. No. Poor me. So if I came round to dinner with you, you'd probably have something really delicious and I'd be tortured. I was once invited to the anniversary dinner of the UN Declaration of Human Rights by Amnesty International, just a local chapter in Australia. And I replied saying, sort of, I'm surprised that Amnesty International would do this to me. I would be sitting next to an empty plate while everyone else is enjoying a dinner, which is a form of torture which Amnesty International would be embarrassed to inflict on a monk. Shame on you. It was a very, very nice rejection letter, and they kept that and they published it. So I don't have dinner. But every now and again, you have to go to a dinner, because that's when people celebrate stuff. So I did once get an invitation to a dinner, and I accepted it. And that was very prestigious, because that was, they were having the Commonwealth Games in Melbourne, and attended by Queen Elizabeth II. And it was preceded by an interfaith service, you know, in the presence of Queen Elizabeth in St. Andrew's Cathedral in Sydney, first of all. So I received this invitation from the then Prime Minister of Australia, Tony Abbott, personally signed, to please come for 3 events. The first was this interfaith service, followed by a private reception in Kirribilli House, just opposite the Sydney Harbour Bridge. That's where the residence of the then Prime Minister. And followed by a state dinner in Canberra in the Great Hall of Parliament. Now that was really high class invitation. So the other monk said, oh, you have to go. That's good PR for Buddhism. You can't refuse that. But I said, look at the invitation. And the invitation had something we call dress code. You can't just go anything for state dinner with a queen. So I looked at the dress. There were three options. And the first option was black tie. Now, I've been a monk for many years. And I said, is that all you wear at a dinner with the queen? Just a tie? What about shirt and trousers? That's what it said, black tie. But apparently that's code. That means black tie and a really sharp suit and trousers and nice shoes. We don't have anything like that in a monastery. So I can't go with a suit. So the next option was even worse. Military uniform. We're pacifists. You can't wear military uniform. So the third option, as soon as I saw the third option, I thought, yes, I can go. Yeah, I can fit that one. And the third option was long dress. This is long dress. So when I walked up to Parliament House, security, of course, and security came up to me and said, are you meant to be here, sir? And I flashed my card, yes, here it is. And so, what did we have for dinner? And when you go to these high-class events, people do research. They've got protocol officers. And I was so impressed with their research. So, the first course was some salad dish. And as John would know, it's an anomaly. Don't ask me why, but Buddhist monks of our tradition are allowed to eat cheese in the evening. Nothing else, not dinner. So there was, the first one was some, cheddar cheese. Not rubbish stuff. This was some of the most delicious cheese. When you have dinner with a queen, I mean, it's not rubbish. It's not what you get from the cheap shops. This is really high-class cheese. And the second course, well, other one had, I think they had Australian lamb or something. I had I forget what the other type of cheese it was. Had to be made in Australia. Again, really delicious. And for the last course, which was, I think, macadamia pie or something, a sweet dessert, and I had dark chocolate. And I thought, wow, these people just really are smart. They find out what you can eat. And that's what I ate. So that's how you can go to dinner. But so they said, Ajahn Brahm and partner. So I took one of my friends, happened to be in Sydney at the time, that's Ajahn Sujato. He went there as well. And for the reception in Kirribilli House, there was the Prime Minister and all his big shots there. One nice thing was there was the head of the Red Cross in Australia, New Zealand. And you find some really interesting stuff there. They had just had their 100th anniversary of their forming in Australia, New Zealand. Because they formed after one of the earthquakes in Christchurch. And for their 100th dinner, the Prime Minister of New Zealand was there and all the dignitaries. In their dinner, they served everybody baked beans on dry bread. Because that was a dinner which they shared out with all the victims of the earthquake in Christchurch 100 years previously. And that was such a beautiful thing to remind everybody of what the Red Cross was there for. Not a sumptuous feast, but the Prime Minister and all his dignitaries so surprised. They're expecting some 3-course, 5-course meal. And they got what victims of earthquakes ate on the first night when they lost all their homes. Oh, that was so beautiful. That's what the world should be like. Remembering what we're here for. but also that at one of those, at that reception, Ajahn Sujata was with me, and because, you know, Queen Elizabeth, you know, she's lots of people around her, there's this other guy who was just standing there twiddling his thumbs. No one was talking to him, so I went up with Ajahn Sujata and I said to him, no, you're losing your hair. If you lose any more hair, you might as well become a monk like me and my friend. Ha 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 ha. And Ajahn said, who was that? I said, oh, that was Prince Edward. What? You can't make jokes of Prince Edward. Well, I can. I just got no shame. You have fun and enjoy yourself. So anyway, so that's why I can't go to dinner with you. Sorry about that. He has amazing fun as a monk. You get everywhere, not only state dinners, but you go and see autopsies. When I was in Thailand, you could go in to see autopsies, and no one will stop you because you're a monk. They respect you so much. The first time I went to an autopsy, in this lecture theatre, and I arrived early, and if I'm grossing people out, but you know me by now. Absolutely true. The lecture theatre was empty, and there was these high windows, and on the windowsill was something which would normally be like a pot plant, but it looked like a human head. I thought, oh, it's a fake one. And I went up there and picked it up. No, it was a real one. I thought, that's really cool. Really awesome. I don't know whose head it was, but they left it up there for decoration. Are you grossed out? I thought, it's cool. I was really weird. But it's only a head anyway. What's really weird about that? But anyway, the reason we went to see autopsies was just so we can understand the nature of the body. It's not really ours. It's a big deal. It's actually quite enlightening to see your brain is just so small. And it causes so much trouble. Such a small thing creates so much trouble. Just like dogs. It's the small dogs which make all the noise. Bop, 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 bop. The big dogs are really nice. They're just like your small brain. Oh, so much problems. Anyway, so any questions or comments just generally from you? That's all the questions here finished. Yeah. Okay. Why your body moves in meditation, first of all, is a lot of time it's actually the body knows what to do to become healthy. You leave your body alone. Why it needs to do that, your body knows. It's an interesting part of meditation. When you let go enough, sometimes your body will twist around, things will jerk, just a release of emotional pressure. But especially when you start twisting around and having a really weird posture. One of the first times this happened in my experience when I was teaching a meditation retreat, one of the other retreatants, you know, they interrupted me and said, look at that woman. Look how she's twisted. Because if I demonstrated that now, you'd have to take me to hospital. There's no way that I could do that. It would look really weird and painful. And so I waited for this woman to come out from her meditation and say, are you okay? I was really concerned about her. She said, I feel wonderful. She said, you were twisted all over the place. Was I? She said, I didn't know that. But I just had a wonderful meditation. And then it clicked. Ah, I said, when did you have your accident? She was quite surprised. She never told me that. But 6 months later, she had such a very, very bad car accident, and she was lucky to survive. She was very heavily injured in the hospital for many weeks. And I said, I understand that somehow or other your body needed a twist like this and that so it could get some healing energy to flow through your body. And qi in Chinese, winds in the body in Indian medicine. It needed to pass through, and the only way it could do that healing, you had to twist around. You couldn't do that by willpower. Your body did that. And that's why it felt so healthy afterwards. So when your body does assume really weird postures, please let it. It's just healing happening. When you get out of the way, it's because we block these things that we stop our body doing its innate healing activity. It knows what to do. Don't obstruct it. And one of the other cases of healing is when you have hot spots in the body. A woman came to ask a question. This happens to guys as well, just happens to be the anecdotes of women, these last two. She said she had a very strange, almost like a fever, but just in her neck and shoulders. Really very, very hot. What the heck is going on? Her accident was whiplash. Most common form of injury in a car accident. And I said, that's your healing going on. The body knows what to do, and it sends energy just to that one part of the body, but only when you let go. You can't make it happen. You have to relax, really be still and peaceful, and you feel that in your body. It gets really hot. So if you ever do have hot spots in the body, please don't interfere. It's an incredible, wonderful thing happening. Hot spots in your breast. You have just stopped a breast cancer. Barely. That's happened. And I just get emotional because that's really important. I feel it's been with too many people who've had surgery and stuff like that. It is traumatic. And to be able to stop that, if ever you have a hot spot like that, oh, well done. You stop a lot of pain, a lot of tragedy. Well done. So this is the natural healing processes of the body. It only happens when you allow it to. You let it go. Relax. And the healing happens. So, movement, hot spots, weird stuff. Go with it. Don't interfere. It's so therapeutic. That's why this meditation is so well known for healing. It's this one guy once came to one of my meditation retreats wearing a rubber face mask. I thought he was some sexual deviant with some fetish. I didn't know what to make of him. And he sort of told me he's wearing this because he has psoriasis. And he actually showed me, he opened up his shirt, this incredible, terrible rash all over his body. He lifted up his trousers, said every inch of my body had this incredible rash. He wears this rubber face mask to stop him scratching the skin off his face. And that was actually a torture. And I felt so much compassion for him that if you are tortured, they let you alone for a few hours a day. This is 24/7. Taking steroids, psychology, hypnosis, nothing had worked. So come to meditation retreat. Who knows? It might work. But he came to check in with me to say, if I leave after 5 minutes, it's not because, you know, I'm fed up with your jokes. It is because it's just torture. It's very hard for me to keep still. But just bless this guy. He stayed the whole 9 days. He made it all the way through. And last, I remember seeing him, one of the beautiful moments. He came with this huge smile on his clear face. Proudly, he unbuttoned and opened up his shirt. Look at this. He lifted up his trousers and there was a band of a rash about an inch wide over each angle. He said, this is all that's left. All that's left. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. He said, people be really concerned, but this is nothing to what I had when I came in here. And seeing results like that, seeing it with your eyes, psoriasis, you know, the rash, red, inflamed, you know, you could see it. This was not imagination. This was a huge, wonderful thing. What causes those things? Stress, letting go, being kind, everything relaxes and a huge amount of healing happens. If that's just all it does, that's pretty amazing. But of course it goes much further than that. It gets into the wisdom. Should say something about insight. Yeah, we get healthy, but we're going to get sick again and die anyway. All doctors fail. Life. My definition of life. Actually, I got this from somebody else, but I've adopted it. Life is a sexually transmitted terminal disease. You can't argue with that, can you? So, but it's understanding more deeply than that. And it's understanding just, it's the quality of life. And that is totally in our control. Karma. Karma gives you the ingredients of this moment. But don't just bitch, complain, why me? What are you doing about it? It's the karma of the present, which is even more important than the karma from the past. This is what you have to deal with. How are you dealing with it? How you react to it? You can't change the world, but my goodness, you can change the way you relate to it. And that changes everything. Shit becomes fertilizer. Mistakes become jokes. Like the time recently when I went to the hospital, to the ICU in Perth. I was called there by this Chinese Buddhist. Their father was in a coma in the ICU, critical condition, about to die, and they wanted me to do some chanting. So I went into the ICU, into the bedside, and my goodness, I gave my chanting everything I got. And it worked. The fellow came out of coma and started recovering. It was almost like a miracle. And that is when I got scolded. The family were very unhappy with me. They said, all of the relations have come from Hong Kong, mainland China, Singapore, for their father's death. We'd already arranged a funeral. And now you've come along, and we've all got to go home, cancel the funeral service, and do it again later on when he dies properly. We wanted you to chant for a peaceful death, not to get better. So I learned from that. Next, every time I go into hospitals now, I ask, what type of chanting do you want? Get better chanting or die peaceful chanting. How do I know? You should have told me. You may laugh, but that's a true story. So you learn to learn on the job. So you make mistakes like that and you've all laughed. You learned something that making mistakes is okay. It doesn't demean you or diminish you. If you make a mistake, admit it. People have use it for your advantage. Like when I was teaching a retreat, when I did an interview for this couple. Did I tell you that one? Get it into Tibet House. There was a young woman and a youngish man. I think I did say this here. First night, yeah. And because she did all the talking, he was there silent. That's why, I made an assumption. And so, after the interview, I asked her, is that your husband? And they just burst out laughing. She said, no, that's my dad. And she was only 16, but she looked like in her early 20s. He was in his late 30s. He looked like maybe 28, 29. And they laughed. but it was such a flattering compliment for both of them. You ask your 16-year-old girl, if she's mistaken for being 22, she loves that. And you ask about 38-year-old guy, and he's mistaken to be young enough to be his daughter's husband. He loves that too. I look that young. And so after finishing laughing, for those who weren't here last night, they came back in 10 minutes later with a big donation, $100. Said, use part of that to get your prescription checked on your glasses. It doesn't always work that way, because doing a funeral, doing a marriage blessing for a wedding, and there was this young Thai girl came in, and this accompanied by this elderly man. And I know that some of the Thai girls, they can't get their parents to come in for visas and whatever. And I thought that, you know, this old man was actually deputizing for the father of the bride. Because, you know, in US, Australian, Western tradition, you know, the father always accompanies his daughter down the aisle for the blessing. So I told this guy, you must be the father of the bride. And he said, no, I am the groom. I never got any donation for that marriage. He was really upset. Anyway, so you do make mistakes, share them. And they're not afraid of making mistakes. It's the stuff of human life, and you laugh at it. The stupidity of human beings, even of Ajahn Brahm. And that makes you approachable. It makes you human. And makes any wisdom and kindness you have attainable by everybody. You're not superior. You're one of the boys, one of the girls, one of us. Sometimes spiritual leaders can be far too aloof. I hate that. That's why I told you my nickname. Remember I told you the first night? Ajahn Donut. Or sometimes people call themselves His Holiness. I don't use that. I'm H.R. Ajahn Donut. His Roundness. Ajahn Donut. I love that title, His Roundness. So if you ever want to invite me next time, or if you want to put a poster up saying, Ajahn Brahm's giving a talk, but his real title is His Roundness. Ajahn Donut. Why not? Okay, any other question before we do our last meditation? Oh, yeah, sorry. A gatekeeper. A gatekeeper can be a supervisor, but being a gatekeeper is also being kind and wise. A wise gatekeeper, not a control freak gatekeeper. So the idea of a gatekeeper is mentioned in the book Mindfulness, Bliss and Beyond. And the gatekeeper guards the mind. Just like a gatekeeper guards your house from burglars. So one of the best ways of protecting a house from burglars is if you're away, invite all your friends over into the house. People you can trust. Because a burglar will not go into a house where there's people. So one of the first things is to replace sort of negative thoughts with positive ones. So your mind has lots of friends, good people, good ideas, good thoughts. And that means the bad ones can't come in. So that is why we do receive praise. This was a weird thing, which, you know, I learned again from just observation and experience. I am well known, work hard in Australia, so one of our local universities, they contacted me saying they were going to give me a prize. It was named after the wartime Prime Minister of Australia, John Curtin. It's called the Curtin Medal, the university's Curtin University. And it was a Curtin Medal for community service, leadership, and what was the other one? And vision. And it's supposed to be reflected the character of this wartime prime minister. And when I received this prize, this medal, just like everybody, you have to give a speech. And my speech was, it was quite a surprise to receive this medal for, you know, my work. There's other people in the community who've done much more meaningful work than I have. And I couldn't have done this without all the support of my friends. But, you know, I don't really deserve it, but thank you anyway. That was my speech. And the next year, I was invited in the audience, the person who got the medal the year afterwards. And when I heard about this fellow's work, I still remember his name, Professor Trophy. He was the head hematologist in one of the major hospitals in Perth, and mostly treating cancer. And he noticed that there was no top care with surgery, radiotherapy, and chemotherapy, but there was something missing. The patients were coming in and going out with no kind aftercare. So he used his influence to clear out a few people, you know, from rooms in the hospital, get a sponsor, which was actually a dairy company, and start a alternative therapy center. Reiki, homeopathy, Qigong. He said anything weird was allowed there. Simply because after going through this, you know, painful radiation therapy or chemotherapy, you could go there for free and get a foot massage. Whether it works or not, someone is looking after you, caring for you, doing Reiki. Whether, you know, it works or not, someone is paying attention to you and giving you some love and kindness. Aftercare. And all his friends, hard-nosed scientists, were saying he has gone crazy. Now this is really out there with the alien abduction stuff. But he stood his ground. He made it happen. And of course, he did the research and found out there was a significant increase in the recovery rate for all these people who made use of this center. It worked. And of course, everyone has had contact with people who have suffered cancer, died of cancer. And, you know, just wow, what a great achievement that was. Putting his reputation on the line for something he believed in, and it worked. And so he got up to give his speech, and he said, I don't know why you've given this medal to me. There's other people in the community who've done much better work than I have, and I couldn't have done this without the help of all my friends. I heard that speech, because that's my speech last time. And I recalled, everybody does that. No one accepts praise in our modern world. And when I heard him say that, I knew he so deserved that prize. That's why I like to go to that place. An incredible achievement of all these people. A wonderful thing to do, to go to such a prize giving. And then I reflected, hang on. Maybe I deserve my medal too. And then I reflected, there were some very intelligent academics who had investigated me and had decided that I deserved some praise. Who was I to reject that? And so from this day on, when anybody praises me, I don't reject it anymore. If you say this was a wonderful little retreat, and you've praised me, I say, yes, thank you, I deserve that. Why are you laughing? Because it's not done, is it? We accept criticism. Oh, yeah, I did the wrong chanting. Should have done the death chanting, not the get well chanting. We accept criticism, but none of us about except praise. And that is just so stupid, so dumb. So if somebody ever praises you, please turn around and say, thank you, I deserve that. Please accept it. Because what happens, you get encouraged and inspired to do even better next time. It inspires you. Because I was always taught, if you accept praise, you get a big head. You don't, you get a big heart. You get inspired. Praise. Accept it when it comes your way. Criticism, listen to it and let it go. Praise, listen to it and keep it. And to say, no, I don't deserve it, is demeaning the intelligence of the person who praises you. Which means it's a waste of time praising people. It's a waste of time saying thank you. Say, oh, no, nothing. So if someone says thank you, you accept it. That makes for a much more wonderful world. Much more healthy individuals. So I don't know if that was your question answered, but it's a nice point.
Is that the way you describe it in the book? I'm
oh, yeah, that was an old book. It always advanced. Now, the gatekeeper, so you see what's going on. That's what the gatekeeper does. Keeps an eye on the CCTV cameras. But knows just the skillful means to arousing good qualities in the future. So these are the four right efforts in Buddhism. It's actually encouraging good, beautiful states and learning how to abandon what they call unwholesome, unskillful, painful states. And that's what is part of the Buddha's teachings. But it's how you do that. And if you look closely, it's all about letting go, renouncing, abandoning. It's burglars. How do you make sure burglars don't come into your mind and take away your happiness? How do you do that? By replacing everything with kindness, compassion, peace. Burglars don't come into your house then. Living a simple life. My father always used to leave the door of his little apartment open. He wasn't afraid of burglars. He was actually hoping a burglar would come in, take pity on him, and leave something. We were literally that poor. So like the burglar came into the monastery where I live, I told that story the first night. Took the chainsaws, the generator, all these expensive tools. And we got more money back on the insurance so we could buy new stuff. So we'd like the burglar to come back again. It's economically a wonderful experience. So anyway, another question? Boy, stop meditating, okay, yeah? Oh, the snake story, yeah. Yeah, but look, the purpose of my life is to be taken advantage of. That's what I'm here for. Take advantage of me. Isn't that beautiful? Because we all take advantage. But this is actually what we call service. Selfless service. Giving. Generosity. I don't have any money. I can't give donations. But I can give my time, my forgiveness, my kindness. So yeah, sometimes, you know, you give so much, you should get tired. But if you're really selfless, you always have some beautiful energy. So you can sit here and talk all day, share, laugh, love. The word laughter and the word love and the word freedom, liberty. The German word for love is, or freedom is Liebe. Freedom, liberality, love. Those are words which seem so close together. To love, to be free, to be generous, liberality. They all seem to connect together. And they do. The real love is to free somebody, not to attach to them. and it's to live. You're dead if you don't serve and love and give and forgive and free. It's not really a life at all. So that's one of the reasons why you come alive when you forgive and are free and laugh and serve. It's always a privilege to serve and to give. It's always known that you get far more happiness if you give than if you eat it yourself. So that's why, sometimes people feed me. We always try and keep something for the dog or the cat. Even if you go hungry, I don't care. It's much nicer to feed the cat or the dog. You see, does it get so much joy? So giving is, again, free joy and free happiness. When I was a student, this Tibetan nun came. She was running an orphanage in Kalimpong or somewhere, Sikkim. And I was so inspired, I took 2 weeks of my food money and just gave it to her. I didn't starve, but I went hungry. I never regretted that. That was such a beautiful gift. Every time I think of that, think of some poor kid somewhere getting an education or getting a meal. That was wonderful. I'd rather have that memory than, remember. Well, I wouldn't have remembered what I ate, but I remember the gift. There's so much free happiness around. But take advantage and give it. Forgive. Someone's hurt you. They mistreated you. They were in the wrong. But forgiving a person, such a beautiful act. Letting it go. Forgiving yourself. You're not such a bad person. Sometimes many people are alone in this world. And even if you're not alone, there's so many rules and regulations, sexual abuse. You can't hug anybody anymore. You might catch something. They may take you to court. So these days, you can all follow me if you wish. How to love yourself. Put your arms out, please. Follow me. Bring them in. It's interesting, the people who didn't do that. Why? It's not stupid. It's not dumb. Try it. If no one else can love you, you can give some love to yourself. It feels great. So as a monk, you can't have a girlfriend, you can't have a wife. So I got me. Okay, enough messing around. Now we can actually do the last meditation. So forget about going to the toilet. It's only 20 minutes. You can go afterwards. If you're really desperate, there's a couple of cups around. We do that in a hospital. Why can't you do that here? Okay. So just a 20-minute one. So look, if you haven't got peaceful yet, you're not going to get peace from the last 20 minutes, so just forget about it. Just kill time. Skillful means. When you don't hope and expect, things happen. Remember the donkey and the carrot. So stop racing after things and just be here. I'm not even going to say anything more. Just leave you alone. If you don't know now, you never will. So just shut up and stop. It is now 5 o'clock. The retreat never ends. There's always another one somewhere else. But I hope you've enjoyed some of this retreat and learned something, experienced things, and maybe go away understanding that professional meditators have a lot of fun. Club Med, not concentration camp. And also just learn how to let go and see what happens. Thank you for being here.